Welcome back, everybody, to the 11th episode of the Tiger View podcast. Dawson, man, it was a heck of a week or weekend, actually. Kind of bunch of things to say and about this regional, but yeah, I mean, this is going to be our regional special, so we're just going to solely talk on the Clemson regional. So obviously, Clemson lost out today to Kentucky, and kind of just recapping the weekend real quick score wise, and then we're going to kind of go game by game with it. So Clemson would win the opening game against USC Upstate 7-3, and then last night kind of a heartbreaker against West Virginia, losing 9-6, and then ultimately today just a total beatdown by Kentucky 16-4 to eliminate the Tigers from the NCAA tournament. So yeah, just a crazy weekend all around. You just kind of want to go into game one, Dawson. What are your thoughts with it?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like just the epitome of what we hammered on all year is our lack of depth and struggling to hit with runners on. And we to give Clemson credit, we did hit with runners on in games one and two, but it felt too little too late down the stretch. And our pitching depth, especially in game two, caused us to lose that game in a game where we had the lead at one point. And you're not really counting on your, high quality bullpen guys and high quality pitchers to not have their best stuff, especially not in this situation. But, going back to game one, I really didn't think Drew Titsworth pitched a bad game. I mean, he went 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs. And then obviously you had Jacob McGovern, who was nails all night long. But from a hitting perspective, it was really cold for a long time in that game. I think we went like 5 innings before we got a run across. And obviously, the guy that stands out is Cam Cannarella. He had 4 RBIs in that game. So, out of the 7 runs we had, he accounted for 4 of those. And really, outside of that, Dom Lispy had 2 hits. Andrew Trufo went 1 for 2 with an RBI. But outside of that, really struggled to get it going for anybody. Jack Crichton, not a good weekend. Colin Parise, not a good weekend. Jaren Pierfy has really struggled as of late. Really, it felt like the whole lineup. It just felt like you just could not ask anybody to have. You had like 3 guys that had a good approach at the plate, and outside of that, everybody looked lost. I mean, their pitcher, Amp Phillips, he made us look silly for a long time in that game. And credit to Upstate. I mean, they were a hot team. They came in and they played really well early, but thankfully we were able to power past them late in the game. So that is the one plus from game one, is that we actually did finish and win the game.
Clemson kind of started out slow, like you said. They ended up scoring, putting up a 3 spot right there in the bottom of the fifth. But from my recap article from that Friday night game, obviously the two players that stood out, and I kind of named them co-players of the game, was Cam Cannarella and Jacob McGovern. So Cam, he went, like you said, 3 for 5, 4 RBIs, 2 runs scored from him, and he was actually a triple away from the cycle. I don't know if you knew that, but he had a home run, he had a double, and then he had just that base hit. But yeah, he was a triple away from the cycle. And then, I mean, we've seen Clutch Cam show up, as people were saying. He showed up in that game. And then Jacob McGovern, man, just crazy what he had to come into. Bases loaded, gets out of the jam, pitches 3 1/3 inning, no hits, no runs. I mean, that's obviously the perfect stat line you want to see coming out of your pitcher in the pen. And then Lucas Malmstead comes in. Lucas Malmstead, we'll kind of touch more on him a little bit later on. But I wouldn't say a bad outing, but still, he comes in, and the first batter he faces, he gives up a home run. But I mean, luckily that didn't affect us, as we kind of added some insurance runs right there in the eighth with a 4 spot. But yeah, Malmstead went 1 2/3, 2 hits, 1 run, and no walks, and then 2 strikeouts. So, yeah, I mean, I really think, which I mean, everybody was saying, Jacob McGovern was the guy who really saved us in that game against Upstate. And I mean, like you were saying, that hot Upstate team, everybody, some people were calling them the most dangerous 4 seed in the tournament. But if you look back, though, I think it was March 4th whenever we played USC Upstate, in Greenville at Fluor Field. Ant Phillips was the one who pitched against us, and I don't know if y'all remember from that game, but I mean, this was kind of like the same situation. It took Clemson a little while to get things going, and they finally did. But yeah, like Amp had our number there for a little while, and then we ultimately kind of drew some blood. But yeah, those are just my thoughts with it from the Upstate game.
Yeah, and I do want to mention, like you were talking about Jacob McGovern, it was weird, when we were down there on field level and it's bases loaded and you had no outs and it's 2-0 and your offense didn't do anything. I mean, I couldn't help but think in my mind, I'm like, we're one swing away here from this game being long over. And Jacob McGovern comes in, and I told people it kind of reminded me of the Braves in 2021 against the Dodgers. When you bring in Tyler Mazdik, and he totally shuts him down. Obviously, he had three straight strikeouts. McGovern had two strikeouts, and then an amazing play by Dom Lispy over there in left field to end the inning. And I think off of that, we were able to kind of roll in and start playing well. And even when they came back and tied it off that solo home run, you had TP Wentworth with an 0-2 pitch. Scores the go-ahead run in the eighth inning right there. I mean, he was electric all late this past year. Today's game, I don't really think he did a lot, which, to be honest, nobody did either. So I'm not really going to hold that against him. But he's a guy that I would look for to be back at just first developed big recruit for him, and he wasn't even super talked about, but I am seeing a lot of complaints on Twitter about a lot of these players these past couple of years that have done a lot for Clemson, more being Monty Lee guys. So hopefully Backich can get a couple of these young guys to roll over and turn into some good players.
Yeah, you really touched on TP like this whole way through, like the whole season. We were doing these pods midway through, and you're like, "Watch out for TP Wentworth." And then we see what he's been doing towards the back end of the season. So I'm definitely excited to see him develop more. Obviously, it was his freshman year, so he's still got more left in the tank and more left to prove as a Tiger. So can't wait to see TP go out there and show what he can do next season and season after that. But yeah, just. First game, I was kind of scared at first. I thought Upstate was gonna do it, and then we ended up coming alive with the bats. But yeah, and then I really feel like just that slow start was kind of just like what was bound to happen for the rest of the weekend, and then it ultimately kind of showed. But yeah, those are kind of like my thoughts from the Upstate game. I mean, not a bad performance, but it definitely still could have been a little bit better, even though we won 7-3, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, it was so weird that it felt like every game this weekend you were just hanging on by a thread to try to win, try to stay alive and try to hold on. And especially Saturday night, I mean, that game took probably 15 years off my life. I mean, we threw Aiden Kanock out there, and honestly, I really didn't like. Once again, like he gave up 4 runs. But true to the matter is we were getting no hit through five. I mean, a pitcher is not, he's only gonna do so much out there. I mean, so what? Aiden Canott could have been straight nails through 5 innings tonight, and it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been 0-0. But it was another game. I mean, Cam Cannarella, I mean, with 4 hits, 3 earned runs again. Andrew Trufo went 2 for 4 that game. So, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers. There's only two people on the team that had more than one hit, and you got Cam who had 4 hits, and then you got Andrew Trufo with 2 hits. The other people to get a hit, Jack Crichton got a hit, Dom Lispy got a hit, and I
That's
believe
it.
that's it. We had 8 hits the entire night. That just is not good enough. And let's go over to we had ele we struck out 11 times. I bet I can guess who struck out the most. Where is he? Where is he? Give me a second. Oh no, I was wrong. Jack
I'm not
Crichton
even
struck
gonna say.
the most. I was gonna think it was Josh Paino because he really struggled this weekend. I believe, like we were talking about earlier, he went like 0 for 10 the entire weekend. And I mean, that is just a killer. I mean, it got to a point to where it almost felt like, did we have anybody else on the bench? I mean, could Jay, because to some point, it does feel like it's just not his weekend. It's just not going his way. And really, it hadn't gone his way a large part of this season. And it really doesn't get any worse than 0 for 10. So, I mean, that we're in a spot right now where probably not having Tristan McLaddy this weekend or Tristan Bisetta really hurts you to where you don't have a bench bat that you can rely on. But I wonder what you were thinking about game two there.
Yeah, game two, like you pointed out, obviously the big stat that stands out to me is strikeouts. That's definitely not the formula of winning if you have 10 plus strikeouts. But once again, you see Clutch Cam come up once again, 4 for 5, 2 runs scored, 3 RBIs, and then Dom Listy with a hit and a run scored. But it seems like Cam and Dom Listy and even Chufo, I mean, those were like the main three guys who kind of carried all weekend. I might be missing somebody else, but mainly those are the three main position players that carried us all weekend. And I mean, whenever you just have three guys carrying your team, there's nine players on the baseball field. I mean, minus the pitcher, you got a DH, but that's not a good percentage of players contributing and actually doing something in the game. So that's definitely not the formula of winning. And yeah, just a crazy second game against West Virginia. I was at the Braves game, but that game kind of ended early, but I was definitely keeping up with it on the way back and watching it on my phone. And yeah, that was just a crazy game, and I ended up making it back to sit down and watch the rest of it. But yeah, just a very rough situation. And also, I kind of want to point out the bullpen stuff. Lucas Mostead, this is the game he really did not show who he's been all season. He ended up pitching an inning and then gives up 5 hits, 4 runs, and 1 walk with no strikeouts. So that's something we rarely you've seen from Mostead all year. I know kind of recently it was kind of iffy with him coming out the pen, but yeah, those are just kind of my thoughts with it.
Yeah, I mean that was. You see, Reed Garris goes inning in 2/3 there, and you're wondering why you pulled him. I just can't. I don't really see the logic behind that. Maybe you wanted to favor a matchup, which wouldn't have made sense because Lucas Mostead has struggled against lefties this year, and maybe you wanted to save Reed, or it was a pain tolerance thing. Because I remember after Reed's first inning, when he came out, he walked past us over there by the bullpen, and he had a huge back brace on. And I mean, he looked extremely uncomfortable. So that's maybe where he was at with a pain tolerance deal. But I mean, if it wasn't, that would have been really. I mean, that is like huge, like miss there. I mean, in my opinion, you let Garris ride that out until you see a visible, serious struggle, and then you throw Mostead in the ninth there to close the game. And then, Mostead gives up 4 earned runs. You bring Joe Allen in, which I really didn't. I don't get that move either. I mean, he walks 2 straight guys with the bases loaded. You
Hits
bring
two
BJ.
batters.
Oh yeah, he hits 2 guys. Yeah. And then you bring in BJ Bailey, who does get you out of things, but it kind of was the same thing today. You brought in like the same idea. You bring in Joe Allen in a spot where you don't think that he can perform, and then you immediately yank him and put BJ back in there. And then you did the same thing today. You slid Nathan Dvorsky in, and he gave up like a ton of runs in a close game. And then you immediately pull him and you throw Jacob McGovern out there. So that to me made no sense to where if you know you're already gonna throw Jacob McGovern out there, why not do it in the high leverage situation when it's a close game? Why do you wait until the guy that you threw out there gives up 3 or 4 runs in a spot where he probably shouldn't even be? Then you throw your best guy out there. I mean, that puzzled me. I mean, there were a lot of moves this weekend that really I had to scratch my head on because I'm like, I just, hindsight is 2020, and I understand that, but even in the moment, it felt really odd to make some of these moves.
Yeah, I felt like a bunch of those moves out of the pen were kind of questionable, like you were saying. I mean, especially with McGovern coming in after who was it you said?
Nathan Dvorsky.
Yeah, Dvorsky coming in after Dvorsky. I just feel like that's kind of a odd move. But Going back to Reed Garris, he was throwing really good in that second game, and you're kind of saying maybe some stuff. I know he was limited. We got him back this weekend. He was limited, still kind of dealing with the injury, but yeah, I just feel like you got to let him ride out there because I mean that's a situation where he's kind of dealing, and then I mean you bring him Alstead and he does what he does, but I feel like. I remember somebody was saying this. I felt like Mossad kind of does better in, when he just has to get three outs. Whenever you bring him around in the eighth and he has to get six outs and three in the eighth, three in the ninth, I just feel like that's not the right move with him there. I feel like he's just a one inning guy who's just prepared to get those three outs and, I mean, get the job done.
Well, to your credit, he did pitch one inning in
Oh, yeah.
tonight's game, but he gave up four runs. I mean, he didn't look very good. He faced nine batters. So yeah, definitely, to your point, he's not good once he has to kind of get down the stretch. And man, I was just it back to back nights. First batter, bomb. Or first batter on game one, bomb. First batter on game two, shot to the gap, score runner. I mean, that is just like that's like the least clutch thing I've ever seen in my life to do that twice at for a guy who like led the country in saves at one point this year. So I mean it's kind of easy to chalk it up as a just a bad weekend, but this was a terrible weekend to pick to have a struggle weekend and really last few weeks struggle.
Yeah, so kind of moving on now, we can kind of roll into the final game that was taking place today. Definitely a bunch of ways you can go about it. I mean, it's all bad, really. But yeah, just so Jarom Purifoy, he went 4 for 4 today. I honestly didn't know that. I don't know. I was kind of back and forth checking in on the game because I was on the way home. But yeah, Jarom Purifoy went 4 for 4. Cam 1 for 4, Listy 1 for 4, Chufo 1 for 4, a bunch of 1 for 4s, and yeah, just not a great day in general.
Yeah, and don't get it like don't for people watching this, don't get it wrong. Like some of these were like garbage time hits. I'm gonna be really honest because I was at the game and I watched the whole thing. I got there at like maybe 10 o'clock, 10:30 today, something like that. And like even from the moment they took the field, hitting bullpen or hitting BP on the field with the turtle cage, I in my mind I'm like, this isn't gonna be good because their body language, their approach, the staff's body language, which was the biggest. Like I understand you just had a huge turnaround. You played late last night. It felt like you gave all your energy, but you gotta win this game. This is literally 2023 all over again, where you lose the Saturday night game and you come out and lay an egg on Sunday morning. I mean, like there were like no hard hit balls in BP today. Like one or two players got a hold of one, but everything else was soft contact, pop-ups, ground balls, and there were no adjustments being made. I didn't see anybody trying to change anything. I will say TP hit one off the work off the past the seats in right center over there. So that was one good thing, but it didn't translate because it went over two in the game. But just overall, just little things like that is it just felt like that there was no energy. And Kentucky, from the moment they stepped on that field, they played as one. Their fans reacted as one. They might have had, when the game started, they were about equal with us in fans. And it felt like every batter, they were engaged. Their whole team was in the dugout doing, waving their arms for each batter. I mean, they totally showed up. They didn't let the moment get to them. They recognized that they were backs against the wall, and they came out swinging. And Clemson, unfortunately, did not outside of the first inning where we scored two, and then immediately gave those runs right back off of booting the ball around and making little league mistakes.
Yeah, another thing about baseball too, now that you mention it, is bringing just that energy. I mean, with you got to have a positive mindset, just high energy, even when your back's against the wall, you just got to bring it. Because I mean, if you don't, like Clemson shut a day. I mean, you get basically run ruled. I know they don't do it in the NCAA tournament, but you would have got run ruled if they were doing those regular rules. But I mean, it's all about who brings energy. It's about all who wants to be there. And I know it's a quick turnaround. I mean, I played baseball before. You have a late night game, and then you got to do it right back again early in the morning, and it's just a quick turnaround. But you just, I mean, you got to bring the energy. It's a new day. I mean, new opportunity. But some more stats that kind of pop out to my eye now that I'm looking at them now. We had 10 runners left on base today. Once again, runners left on base. And then 11 strikeouts, another double-digit strikeout game. Yeah, just, I don't know, just very frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I just, there's literally nothing to be said about today's game. I mean, I talked to Andrew before the game, and he and a lot of the seniors I really felt in the upperclassmen is they wanted to really empty the tank, and I'll give it to them. I mean, Cam this entire weekend came to play. Andrew, for the most part, came to play, just finding ways to get on base, doing the little things right. And Dom Lispy, came to play outside. He did drop a fly ball today, which, I mean, in the post game, they asked him about it, and they asked him about the defensive miscues that were going on today. And I believe we had like seven errors today too. So, but he chalked it up, and he was just being honest. He said it's an anomaly, and it is. I mean, it really is. This team has defensively been a pretty solid team today, or been a pretty solid team this year, but today, it felt like I was watching the local 1A high school down the road like play baseball today. It really did. I mean, you would think that these guys just would be able to focus more, but it felt like nobody could secure the ball. We're booting it around, we're giving up extra bases, we're missing on double plays, we're letting the ball, taking your eye off the ball on a grounder. And one thing that I do want to say about Jack Crichton first is he's got to learn to get off the bag. He's got to learn to move. Andrew Chufo made a dive and stop at some point during today's game, and he threw it over like while he's falling down. And obviously, like he wasn't gonna make the out. And Jack's got to know to get off the bag there. It was about like this far out of his glove from where he was trying to extend. At that point, take a step off the bag and stop the ball. Because you know what happened? It bounced past him and the runner took second. He's got to learn in that moment too. There are times that you need to concede that play and just stop the ball. And I mean, I'm sure you learned the same thing in high school. I mean, those are little simple things, just simple mistakes that ended up costing us this team a blowout today,
Kind of just want to touch on the pitching. Our guy Talon Bell, 2 1/3 innings pitched, 3 hits, 6 runs, 5 earned, 1 walk and 1 strikeout. Just a tough outing for Talon. And then let me count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We used 6 pitchers today. And then like you said, like we touched on earlier, Nathan Dvorsky coming in right after Talon Bell, doesn't really do anything. And then you bring in Jacob McGovern, just kind of a weird situation. Coach wise, thinking they're bringing Dvorsky in before McGovern, but yeah, and then you got Justin LaGurnick who come in to pitch, and then BJ Bailey, and then Chance Fitzgerald. So just kind of just throwing everything out there out of the pen, really.
And I mean, it's gonna like, I continue to look at the spot. I believe it was 4-2, and Talon's getting pulled, and you put Nathan Dvorsky in a 2-run game in an elimination spot, and he gives up the 1 run that scored was not credited to his earned run. That would have been Talon Bell's because he was already on base. So that's why the box score looks like that. But if you, I cannot get that out of my head that if you knew that you were going to be, that you already were going to commit to throwing Jacob McGovern, why would you put Dvorsky in front of him? Just, I don't understand that. It's a 2-run game in a tight situation to where you need a stop and you have your two options. Nothing against Nathan Dvorsky. But if you've got Jacob McGovern, he's going to be the first guy you throw out there in that high leverage situation. And unfortunately, you don't. And they do push across that run. And then he walks a guy. And then Jacob comes in. And I mean, it's just all downhill from there. I guess like the one good thing we can look at is Chance Fitzgerald went 2 1/3. He didn't allow any, he didn't allow a hit. So I guess that's the one good thing we can look at from the bullpen perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the damage was pretty much done. But yeah, that's still something positive to look at over the overly negative game today and overly negative regional at that. But yeah, just tough way to end the season. Colin Priest ends the season right there with the strikeout. But yeah.
Yeah.
But but yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I don't have nothing else to say. I mean, I think I've kind of had my peace with it. I've kind of took a little moment to just decompress and just get ready for a long summer ahead. And then we got football season coming up. So just definitely not where I thought we would end the baseball season. I kind of had a little bit of a higher expectation for the baseball team, but you know what? It is what it is. It's baseball. It happens. It's sports. You know, all that jazz.
Yeah, I do want to say something though about the press conference. I was there today. It was a really long press conference. But first of all, there was a tweet out there by Chapel Fowler talking about Eric Bakich mentioning South Carolina, and then the clip started to roll, and it made it seem like this is not a knock against Chapel. Chapel was doing his job. This is more of a talking to people about not looking at context. And the context of the clip was, so Eric Bakich sits down and he's talking about the day and he's talking about the season, but he mentions a really important thing. He says, "I understand the outside noise. I understand what we have to do, what the expectations are." He said, "But in this press conference for for the next few hours, I just want to appreciate the seniors and talk about them." And then he goes on to talk about beating South Carolina. And everyone on Twitter now is looking at that, and they're not hearing the first part. All they're seeing is a little 15-second clip of him saying, "We beat South Carolina." And people are thinking that, is that something we're hanging our hat on? Is this the new standard now to where we don't care about the postseason? We just want to beat our rival. And like that's not true at all. Like that is like the biggest thing about this whole media thing is people will take that 15-second clip and interpret it however they want. And now everybody on Twitter is slandering Eric Bakich, saying that he's not going to be able to get it done, this and that, that he's satisfied with just another regional loss. And that's totally crap. Like, no, I have heard nobody stand up and say, "Hey, this is not what he actually meant. He's talking about the seniors specifically who won't be on the team next year, who are done with their careers. He's trying to give them something to hold on to." Of course, he knows that we can't hang our hats on a rival win this year, even if the ending of the season was a disappointment. But I mean that like whole experience, and then seeing the overreactions from people that just this weekend. I mean, this entire year, everyone praised, for the most part of the year, everyone praised these players in the lineup. And I know specifically, I know a tweet from the beginning of the year of a guy, I'm not going to say who it is, who said that Josh Paino is a serious step up from Blake Wright. And they were really glad that we got these transfers in. And you go look at these same posts nowadays, and you would think Josh Paino and all these like players are the worst human beings of all time. And somebody called out Andrew Tufo today, and I'm thinking, what are we doing? I mean, I understand if people are frustrated about this bad weekend, and they're frustrated about not having the pitching, and they're just angry, but I feel like the fans are taking their anger out on the wrong people. I mean, they don't know these people, they don't understand. And frankly, what I would tell people, everybody who complains about pitching to me right now and about pitching depth, I say, "Hey, I mean, you can donate. You can pull up 110 Society. We can make that happen. We seriously can, because if there's one thing that Clemson baseball needs right now, it's money to work with." And that was a big thing that we talked about in the media rooms last night after the game. And, that's something that is going to have to be addressed. And I think that Eric Bakich will get what he wants when it comes to that, the same way Brownell always finds a way. He's got a couple of families that help him out. I think Eric Bakich can build relationships with boosters to help him out. All he's got to do is show that they're serious about what they're doing. And showing that you're serious is not coming out looking like this today, frankly. So I do see both sides of it, but people just need to understand that one day or one weekend does not define your program. And they need to look at the big picture of, okay, you lost your Sunday starter before the season even started. Then you lost your Saturday starter. Then you lost your other Sunday starter in Justin Lagernick. Your pitcher of your games 1, 2, and 3 that you have lined up, only one of those pitchers was actually supposed to pitch in the starting lineup this year, and that's Aiden Canoc. The game 2 guy, Drew Titsworth, he's a bullpen piece. He was never supposed to be a starter. Game 3, who ended up being Talon Bell, just was able to throw go down the stretch. I mean, he's been hurt the entire. He's been recovering from an injury that he sustained last year. So you're forcing a lot of these pitchers into these big situations that they're not even supposed to be in. I mean, imagine what this pitching lineup would have looked like, the depth would have looked like if Reed Garris doesn't get hurt for a month, if Ethan Darden never gets hurt. And by the way, Ethan Darden's last start or last two starts were affected by his injury. That's a known thing now. So we can get out of the way of saying that Ethan Darden, is bad, because I just don't believe that. Then Sunday, you lost your Sunday starter in a really talented Dane Moeller, who it's going to take him some time next year to recover because that's a serious surgery. And then imagine that you have got Talon Bell or Michael Gillen or the transfer from the Citadel, or just there's just so many pitchers that just had an unfortunate ending to their season prematurely, that it put us in bad spots. And I don't think enough people are taking a breath and thinking about that before they speak.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to look back and just sit down for a minute, just grab a chill pill or something, and just really sit back and look at the talent we do have. And it's just unfortunately, I mean, get struck with the injury bug. I mean, at the end of the day, you really can't help that. I mean, it happens. But I am excited to see what we have coming for next year. I do know that Coach Beckett, he will be hard at work. I think from what I've seen, he said he's going to actually start tonight, right? Or something like that. He's going to start, I mean, building for next year and just getting talent for next year. But yeah, I just with the emotions high, just people need to, like I just said, sit down, grab a chill pill, just kind of decompress for a while and just sit back and think. I mean, what this team has done, I mean, the past year or 2 years, 3 years, I mean, under Eric Bakich, I mean, it's better than what we had. And I mean, I feel like kind of people are getting spoiled. I mean, we made Super Regional last year, end up losing our regional this year. But I mean, you just got to really sit back and kind of appreciate, I mean, what Eric Backage is doing. And then I mean, just to put all these players on blast that they were kind of praising at the beginning of the year, you got to think those guys work hard. I mean, they're a college kid, they're our age, like they're trying to perform at the highest level in Division I baseball, and you just got to really take in the whole situation and just sit there and think before you say, really, because I mean, those guys work hard. You don't know. I mean, they really work year around. There's no off season. I mean, they go into summer ball now with whatever team they may go play with. I mean, they're always training. So I mean, there really no days off for those guys. So I mean, you got to kind of give them a break, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, from a fan perspective, I do get wanting results and this and that, but at the end of the day, we had this thing called the 24-hour rule in high school when we were playing, and it states that after losses like this and big moments, is sometimes you just need to take 24 hours to reflect on it before you make big comments about it or before you speak on it. I know we're kind of breaking that rule here because we did play today, but we are not in the same realm of like a player who has to sit here and deal with this loss. Like, do you think the players wanted to lose this game? Like, come on. Like, I see people blasting some of these guys, and I'm like, you think these guys wanted to lose? I mean, what's going through your mind here? Like, like, did they mess up? Yes. Did they strike out in untimely situations? Yes. But the fact of the matter is these guys are wearing the tiger paw. You know, at the end of the day, they're our people. They're our guys. They're our players who, you know, every time they're winning and people are performing well, people are showing up in those stands, they're buying those jerseys, they're talking about them on Twitter, they're praising them. But when things like today happen, it's like a total 180. I mean, it is just, what does Dabo say? Well, our coach used to say, don't get too high with the highs or too low with the lows. And today is a really deep low that, you know, people got to learn to stay more moderate with it. You know, you got to stay level. You got to stay linear. You want to be on a linear path. You don't want to be here with your emotions, because in that situation, you're going to have a Friday night game where everyone thinks the team's the greatest thing in the world because they win in an electric environment. And then the next night you lose. And in the eighth inning, you see half the stadium is leaving. You know, I mean, that is just, I mean, I know it happens everywhere, but it has just got to be stopped, you know?
Yeah, in my opinion, with like things like this, I mean, when things aren't great and people go crazy, just all of a sudden, I really feel like the people who stay calm and collective, I mean, you really find out who your true friends are and are not true friends, true fans are, in all honesty. I mean, I know it's not always going to be great. I mean, you're going to hit lows like this, but I mean, it's all about just kind of running that course and just staying with the guys. I mean, even in the bad times, but I mean, I don't know, just very not good situation. I know it sucks, and I mean, I know we hate it, but I mean, it is what it is, you know.
I guess, you know, now is, I guess we can look forward to football. You know, that's the only way you can look at it now.
Yeah, that baseball season being over kind of wraps up the athletic year. I know you kind of got track going on, but like they're towards the back end of their season, but yeah, that pretty much wraps up the athletic season. I mean, it's come and gone once again. I mean, it just felt like we ended baseball season last year, but yeah, I mean, now we go into the summer and you got off season stuff with baseball and every other sport going on, and then before you know it, you know, we'll be kicking off LSU time. But I'm excited though, to see what the off season for baseball does hold. I really do feel like we'll hopefully land some big transfers, and I know Eric Backage is gonna work really hard, but I know people with basketball season, it was just a hot topic of who's coming to Clemson, who's transferring in, and I know it'll be the same for baseball. So I am excited about that part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, Eric Backage said today that they've got some targets. Tonight they're starting. Tomorrow exit meetings, so that they're gonna find out a lot tomorrow. You know, you're probably gonna find out a lot about transfers these next couple of days, in and out. But you know, like I said, you know, don't be too down with who leaves and who's headed out these next couple of days, because you know it's happening. It's gonna happen. It's that type of year. You know, it's that time of the year. But really, I think now we just got to look at what do we got to replace? You know, you're replacing a third baseman, a shortstop, dare I say first baseman, you know, unless Jack Crichton stays there full time now. But still, if that happens, you're probably seeing Luke Gaffney hit the portal. You got to replace a left fielder, a center fielder. That's a lot of that's and a couple of guys in your bullpen. Your closer, Reed Garris. I mean, that's just a lot. But if there's anybody that can do it, I trust that the staff can figure it out. And I mean, really, if you're looking at pitching next year, I know people aren't going to want to talk about it this early, but if everything goes according to plan, you'll have Aiden Canuck as your ace. Talon Bell as your number two after a full offseason recovery. And you know, don't get it twisted. That guy is an extremely good player. Perfect Game was super high on him, and he is gonna be a great ball player. And then Sunday, I don't know if Dane Moeller will be ready at the start of the season, but eventually you can work him in there. And I mean, if they felt strong enough that him as a freshman could pitch on a Sunday game. I'm like, you know, Sunday games are nothing to play with. You know, Aiden Canuck started there last year, but if they felt confident enough in him, I mean, that should tell us that we could have three pitchers that are pro level. And like, you know, I'm kind of rambling a little bit here, but Eric Backage did say today that, and I don't know if anyone had talked about it, but He said the key to getting Omaha is just having good players. You just got to have MLB players. You got to have good players, at the end of the day. So maybe that's something for him to, kind of chew on a couple of days and say, if we really want to do this, if we really want to get back to Omaha and not just wear it on the back of our hats, then we got to get good players. And by all means necessary, if you got to drop some dead weight and bring in some, the best player, then so be it,
Yeah, I'm excited for what the offseason does hold. I do trust Eric Backage and staff to, kind of do whatever they need to do to get us right back up top. But I kind of have a question for you, and I've seen it all over Twitter. And it might be kind of, I don't know how to take it, but do you think that on the back of their hats just say Omaha with the tiger paw on the back? Do you think Omaha should be stitched on the tiger paw?
No, not now. No.
Yep.
We haven't been to Omaha since I was 5 years old. I mean, I just, because at the beginning of the year, you do the little training work where, like, you're not allowed to wear the Clemson logo until you prove you're a Tiger. What about we do it with Omaha? What have we proved in the last 15 years that we deserve to wear Omaha on our hats, I mean, so let's just hold that to the same standard. Say, hey, the players aren't allowed to wear Clemson gear until they earn the right to wear it. Then why should everybody be wearing Omaha on their hats when they haven't earned the right to wear it, So people might disagree with me. I don't care. I mean, that's just to me, it feels like a participation trophy almost. The same with the World Series participation trophy, which I understand. You get there, you do earn that right to have that. But I mean, for that to be the best thing in our trophy cabinet at a place like Clemson is kind of a little kind of upsetting a little bit.
Yep, I'm right there with you with that answer. I was kind of hoping you'd say the same thing, but I mean, I know it's kind of tradition, but honestly, it's not becoming a tradition. I mean, we haven't
Yeah,
been there since 2010.
I've never seen us go to Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, we were 5 years old whenever the last time they went to Omaha, and I mean, I really didn't keep up with baseball then like that, like I do now, but
Yeah, I was too
yeah,
busy playing with like toy trains.
Yeah, but I do feel like they need to kind of take the Omaha off the back until they earn it, like you said, what they do in the fall, kind of earning to be a Tiger or whatever. But yeah, I do feel like that should happen. I don't know if it will. I mean, but probably not. But
No.
that's just my opinion on it. I did kind of state that in the article. I did a little season recap article this afternoon on the baseball season, and I kind of put that there at the back end of it. And I mean, I was seeing people on Twitter talking about it, but yeah, that's just my opinion. I mean, I feel like that's the right move. I mean, it kind of just gives some fuel to the fire, I guess you could say. But yeah, that's my opinion with that.
Yeah, might as well. And maybe it is a little bit of a licensing thing because they do sell that and it's a trademarked logo,
Yeah.
but I'm pretty sure that they could figure something out there. It
Yeah.
that wouldn't be that big of a jump. Maybe
Yeah.
we should just start putting regional on there. Start small.
Yeah, that's what my dad was saying the same thing. But yeah, I mean, I know there's probably a whole bunch of licensing and all that other stuff that goes along with it. But yeah, we'll see if that really happens. But yeah, in my opinion, I feel like they should. All right, well, is there anything else you want to touch on? I feel like we really did a good job. I mean, given the circumstances.
Well, I wish we were talking about I guess by now the game would be over. I wish we were talking about who we're going to play in the Super Regional, but unfortunately, we're going to be talking about football season and transfer portal these next couple of episodes and diving all into that. So
Yep, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But yeah, I mean, me and Dawson still gonna be doing these podcast episodes, kind of going more into football now that, I mean, it's that time of season. You got predictions coming out and just all that other stuff that comes with it. And Dawson and I, we kind of have a little bit of some special episodes lined up. We ain't gonna say anything about it right now, but we kind of got some stuff going on behind the scenes that we think y'all will like. But yeah, just kind of be staying tuned with that. But yeah, that's really all I got. Is that you good, Dawson?
I'm great. It's 10 o'clock. I've been on the road all day. Watched my team lose. I almost forgot my computer.
Oh
So,
man. Yeah, we almost didn't have a podcast tonight, but yeah, luckily Dawson found his computer. But yeah, definitely a long weekend. It was a fun weekend, got to hang out a little bit besides the ballpark, so that's always fun. But yeah, that's about it, guys. That's really it we got for baseball. So wrapping up on baseball and football slowly approaching. It'll be here before you know it. All right, well, that'll do it. That's the 11th episode of the Tiger View Podcast. And as always, it's been Gavin and Dawson. See everybody, and as always, go Tigers.